If your passion lies in elite British road racing and you want an inside line on the teams, riders, organisers and sponsors that make this sport such a compelling spectacle, you're in the right place. I'm Timothy John, and joining me for every episode is my co-host, the Managing Director of Brother UK, Bill Jones.
Thanks, Tim. It's great to be here. We're going to use this platform to talk about all the key issues surrounding the sport. With special guests, deep dives into hot topics and plenty of chat, we'll keep you informed about all things UK racing. Stay tuned.
Hello and welcome to this special edition of the Brother UK Cycling Podcast, where today we're joined by Deb John, the co-founder of Cold Dark North, a brand, not a business, to use their own phrase, dedicated to promoting cycling in the Lake District, Yorkshire Dales and Forest of Bowland. A former racer, Deb leads Cold Dark North's racing operations, including its proper Northern Road Race Series, a three-race series of National B events at Cape and Ray, Oakenclough and Ufton. The recent edition of the Cape and Ray Road Race was another unqualified success, and this Sunday's round in Oakenclough will provide an eagerly anticipated follow-up. With British Cycling's flagship National Road Series reduced to just six races for women and five for men this season, and new and exciting National B events springing up with refreshing regularity, Cold Dark North seems in the vanguard of a shift in domestic road racing. Who better then to ask than Deb for an inside line on the reinvigoration of British domestic road racing from the grassroots of the sport. Deb, thank you very much indeed for joining us.
My pleasure.
Well, let's dive in. How was the Cape and Ray Road Race? We're a few weeks down the road now. I mean, when we spoke before the race, you feared cataclysmic weather conditions, but it turned out fine, I think.
Really very, very good. We only had a bit of rain towards the end of the women's race. Most of the racing was in dry conditions, if a bit blustery.
Well, you had a couple of very worthy winners, I think it would be fair to say, in Ollie Peckover and Kat Ferguson. Tell us a little more about them.
Well, Ollie Peckover, I think a lot of people rate him as a racer, even though he seems a little bit to fly under the radar. But he didn't only win the overall race. He won the King of the Mountains also. So a very worthy winner, I think. And Kat Ferguson, kind of a revelation, although not so much so, because I remember I was watching her race in the Junior World's Cross and she came sixth. So that's no small achievement. And if it wasn't for Sammy Stewart beating her to the Queen of the Mountains, she would have had a clean sweep of all the competitions, apart from competitivity, but all the competitions. So yes, amazing.
And how about the organisational side? Was that also a success? Did you get enough funds in the tin to do it all again next year?
Yes, we're really fortunate to have some great sponsors who've been with us for a while, who sponsor the prizes, financial and otherwise. We had such full, strong fields in both races, especially the women's, because it's such a hard course. And it was fabulous. It was just a fabulous race.
I was talking to Phil Jones, you know, Brother UK's managing director and this podcast co-host. And I said, Phil, I'm going to speak to Deb. And he said he'd ridden with you and had been, quotes, dropped early. He said, go anywhere near a hill and you're likely to be dropped. Do you have any comment to make, Deb?
It was a little while ago and I'm probably not so great up hills at the moment, but it was a pleasure. I remember that ride with a lot of fondness. Tobes, myself and Phil. It was a great ride over the Coal Road, which is a legendary road around here, a legendary ride.
Well, let's get into the meat of this conversation. Let's talk about Cold Dark North. And you personally, Deb, when did you begin organising races? Before Cold Dark North existed, I think.
Well, I started organising the club I was with. I started organising their reliability ride for a couple of years. So that kind of gently edged me into organising a ride and kind of dealing with all the people who wanted to enter something. And then I started to volunteer on races to, I guess, learn from the bottom up. It's quite a steep learning curve as an organizer. And I think it's a really good idea for would-be organizers to volunteer on races so they can see how it works.
What was your motivation for getting involved on the organisational side? I mean, why become a race organiser?
I think partly it was that I was really getting a little bit long in the tooth for racing, and you have to protect your bones when you get to my age, etc. But I love racing. I just love it. It's such a great spectacle. And I have a lot of respect for racers, and especially the women, because there hasn't always been such a great scene for women's racing, especially at grassroots level. Having raced Cape and Ray myself and known how difficult it was, when I was given the chance to organize it, I leapt at it, especially because it involved a women's race and it was a flagship of women's racing. So I thought that was a great springboard to put on other women's races and always make sure that for every men's race, there was a women's race and we treated them equally. I don't know if you call it fun, but the satisfaction bit of it and the response from women and men has just been fantastic. Incredibly satisfying.
What qualifications did you have as a race organiser, if that's the right phrase? I know, for example, from an earlier conversation that you're also a BC certified commissaire and that you have experience in organising other things. Were you able to call on that wider experience?
There's a lot of transferable skills from other areas, both a florist and a caterer, being detail orientated and making sure that everything is right. I was actually a research fellow at a university. I have an academic career behind me also. And I really enjoy working cooperatively. Flat hierarchies, they're my preferred context. So I think all those things added together make me quite skilled to do these kinds of things.
Was your experience as a rider a help or a hindrance? Did it give you an inside line on the qualities of a good bike race? Or is a rider's perspective completely irrelevant to the demands placed on an organiser?
No, I don't think it was a hindrance at all. I think being part of the peloton that rode, although never really up at the pointy end, when you talk with the other riders afterwards, you pick up things that they weren't so happy about or things that didn't work very well without being criticised personally. So I already had a little pot of things that I wanted to pay attention to and that I wanted to work on. We try and be as professional as possible putting on the races and not use, oh, well, this is just a national B, it's not that important. It is that important. And if you're going to do something, then you do it as best you can. No excuses. So I really try to answer people's inquiries as quickly as possible, not leave it a week. I want everybody to feel that they've been taken notice of and their entry into it and their riding in it is appreciated by me.
When did you found Cold Dark North with Toby?
2016.
And what was your motivation behind that?
Toby moved up from London and we both love the area we live in. And for riding, there's nothing quite like it. But it's very undiscovered in many ways for riders. So we kind of wanted to promote it. We initially looked at cyclotourism, routes, etc., etc. But I think we quickly realised that was a full-time, a totally full-time thing you had to get into. Toby has a full-time job. I did at the time. So when we moved into running races, that's not full-time, but it is quite demanding, but for short periods of time. So we just gradually segued into settling into something that worked, that answered what we both wanted to do in terms of cycling.
Had you already organised the Cape and Ray Road Race before Cold Dark North was founded, or was it an early project for Cold Dark North?
It was an early project for Cold Dark North. And it was a project where we were really clear that we could put what we thought was important into effect, you know, giving opportunities to both men and women and making it equal.
Well, we're talking almost exclusively about Cape and Ray, but there are two other races in the proper Northern Road Race series, Oakenclough and Ufton. Oakenclough, of course, being this weekend. When did you add them to the series? And again, what was your motivation for doing so? Did it seem like a natural progression?
We ran Cape and Ray, and then we picked up the defunct National Women's Masters Road Race, which was really important, supporting that with a 2-3-4 race. And we did that for 4 years. In the latter two of those years, we also ran the National Men's Masters Road Race because that had been dropped as well. It's quite a lot more organising because there are different requirements when it's a national championship. So They were both hugely exhausting to do. So we decided that as other people in the country would like to run it, and these things should be shared around the country, then we would pass that on. And I still wanted to use the courses, the circuits that we'd used. So I came up with the idea of let's run a team series at this level so that juniors can try racing with seniors and people get a chance to race as a team rather than just a whole load of individuals. So it encourages different skills and different attitudes. And Toby, as usual, was completely supportive of what may have been a crazy idea. And there didn't seem to be much else like that. There's some two-day stage races, which are fantastic, but there was nothing in terms of, or not so many things in terms of series for men and for women.
If you wanted to make Cape and Ray a National A race, or indeed any race from the proper Northern Road Race series, would that be a possibility? Is that even an ambition?
Only if National A races change some of the requirements they have. It has to be a closed road for it to be a National A, which involves a lot more expense in terms of the police closing the roads, barriers, the equipment that's used, timing chips, etc., etc. So those things are quite difficult. The roads are very narrow in places, so geographically, practically, it might be difficult, but I would really have to talk to somebody else about those requirements. I don't know that I would want to take that on because that seems more organizing with large bodies like local councils and county councils and raising vast amounts of funds, tens of thousands. I'm not sure if I really want to go into that, although I would always be up for helping or being involved in doing something like that.
Can you tell us about the defining characteristics of a National B? I mean, from the top of my head, you don't need to close the roads. You can operate with the support of the National Escort Group. The field size, I think, is limited to 60 riders, dependent on the commissaire. I mean, have I understood that correctly?
Well, it depends on the circuit and what the BC risk assessment for the circuit is and how many people it allows. You can sometimes ask for dispensations, but in all honesty, I think that 60 is probably a good number for the courses that we have around here. What else? Well, there's a basic standard of kilometres you have to cover for it to meet a National B standard. They can be less depending on the altitude climbed. Cape and Ray has over 1,500 metres of climbing in the race. So it means it doesn't have to meet the limit of kilometres. You can do slightly less. There are altitude and distance criteria you have to meet. Those are the main ones, I think.
Who are the people that you couldn't run a National B race without?
Couldn't run them without the NEGs, without the expertise of the comms, who know the courses, who have to drive the courses beforehand. We put out all the signs. We have a great guy, Alan Roper, here, who always delivers all the signs. He's incredibly helpful about everything to do with signage. We put those out the night before, the day before. The comm will drive the course first thing in the morning, taking notice of where everything is, the weather, the state of the roads, etc. So he or she can deliver a good speech to the riders, informing them of any potential problems. And I couldn't do it without the accredited marshals, which is a fantastic thing that British Cycling have introduced. They get trained, they have the ability to be able to stop traffic for a certain amount of time. They have a uniform, so people take notice of them rather than just somebody waving a red flag. And I couldn't do it without the small team of people who helped me in all my races. Some of them aren't even cyclists, but they really love the buzz of being involved in organising it. So that's great.
And the medics, are they provided by BC or do you have to provide those yourself?
I source those. That's changed since we first started. It's become much clearer the level of medical support that you need on the route. You have to go with a firm who provides that. You can't just put a nurse and a doctor in a car and say, drive around. I'm very pleased about that. Even though it is an added expense, I think it's a very important one because cycling is dangerous.
What's driving that change? Is it things like the concussion protocol? Is it something specific? I mean, does it have to be somebody medically trained who also understands cycling in the doctor's car?
I don't think you need to understand cycling. It helps if you get a bit of experience driving your vehicle in the peloton of vehicles, because you need to know how they operate. But no, it's medical expertise, really.
Do you receive any general guidance from British Cycling. I know that they have a role within the organisation called a cycle sport developer, who advises on things like the most appropriate date on the calendar, for example. Do you liaise with BC at any level?
Yes, we usually put our dates in. We have date setting meetings the year before. We usually put our dates in then. But there is a mismatch in that that I'm sure will be addressed by British Cycling. But often the national A's put them in much later than us in the national B's. So it can be, and this was the situation for Cape and Ray, that usually it's on the very last weekend when the clocks go back. But quite late on, a national A, the Cycle Classic, put the women's and junior race on the day that we were going to. Well, obviously, that's such a big race and we don't want to be in competition for riders with it. So we moved our race and we had to move it forward rather than backwards because the calendar was getting quite full. It would be good if we could somehow have a system where everybody puts their dates in earlier so we can sort that out before the year starts, as it were. But it is, when you think it's a whole country divided into different regions, etc., it's quite a jigsaw to put together.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, what about the costs? We talked about costs briefly in our earlier conversation within the context of National A races. I think one of the many attractions for an organiser in staging a National B is that it's substantially cheaper. So what are the costs in putting on a National B? There must still be, you know, key areas of expenditure that you just can't get around.
All the volunteers have mileage expenses. When you think about the level of expertise they offer, it's not a huge amount, but it is a large amount in terms of the percentage of entry fees, which is how we cover the costs of our races. The first aid, that's a considerable cost, but also completely worth it. The halls, since we started, they've pretty much doubled. I'm sure that's to do with heating, to do with all kinds of things. We pay a levy to the national British Cycling and to the region for every rider that enters. Out of their entry fee, there's a levy paid. We put some of the prize money, our sponsors give the rest of the prize money, but we also contribute some of our of what we take in entry fees towards the prize money. And because our races run all day, an awful lot of races maybe only have a men's race in the morning. So I feed everybody in the middle of the day. And obviously that costs something in terms of energy. And all those costs really add up. Yeah, to a couple of thousand, maybe more.
Now, the perception is that National B is more accessible, more affordable, a more easily achieved standard of racing. But clearly, there's a level of professionalism demanded as well.
Yeah, there really is. And because we've used all these circuits a number of times, it's really important that the people who live on the circuits do not feel overlooked or disrespected or uninformed about what's going to happen. In the past, it's just been, oh, there's a race happening. Nobody told us, but suddenly we can't get out of our house. So we really try and put up signs beforehand, talk to the people in the know, get information out there and get people on our side. And I think that's really, really important if we're not to lose circuits, because we have lost circuits through people on the course saying we don't want this anymore.
I mean, your proactive stance, Deb, sounds very sensible. I know that the team who put on the National Hill Climb Championships on When It's Past staged a lengthy campaign, if that's the right phrase, to sort of win public opinion. You know, they donated all of their profits to local charities and Brother UK sponsorship formed part of that. So yeah, I think you're definitely on the right lines there. You mentioned putting up signs. Does Cold Dark North own a big chunk of infrastructure these days, or are you begging and borrowing and getting what you need when you need it?
We own the numbers and we own the sticks that the signs go on. But BC provide radios, car lights, signs that go on the sticks, the podium, all kinds of things that would be very hard if we had to also. We try and buy things each year with any money over and above that we make. But no, it would be very hard to put on National Bees without that kind of support from the region.
I mean, generally speaking, Deb, do you feel that you're well enough supported by British Cycling as a National B race organiser?
It's difficult in some ways when you're dealing with the National BC and the Regional BC. They can be quite different animals. And working in the region, I probably have a closer relationship with the regional officers than with the national officers, who I really only had to deal with when I was putting on the national masters races. They're a little bit more distant than the regional ones. So in that way, yes, I would prefer dealing with the regional officers. I think they have quite a difficult job and I think they do it as well as they can.
I mean, diving further into the economic context of a National B race, is Cold Dark North a not-for-profit company? How would you describe your approach to race organisation from an economic point of view?
We are a not-for-profit organisation. We're not the ASO, regardless of how much we might like to be. Neither of us make a living out of this or anything. But it is important that we do build up a little bit of money just in case one of our races doesn't cover the costs. And also, even though we don't put on 3-4 races, we like to support new riders going into racing, especially things around us, which might be time trials or hill climbs, which aren't quite as off-putting as a road race. You're not going to end up in a bunch. You're less likely to come off, less likely to have an accident. So we try and encourage people by sponsoring their entry into, say, the hill climbs, things like that. Things that come our way and people ask us, then we'll always consider helping them.
What are the principal sources of revenue? Is it race entry or are there other sources around that?
The principal source of revenue is race entry. And as I said, our sponsors who either provide financial prizes or other prizes. We work with Fell Brewery and Atkinson's Coffee. Thinking coffee and beer are two things that riders can really relate to. Although when it comes to the juniors, unfortunately, it's very difficult. We can't really hand them out beer as a prize. We do give them coffee, but they're not that keen on it, so they kind of hand it to their parents. But yeah, it is vital, the financial support we've gotten from our sponsors, in order for us to give good prizes. We could run the race without that, but we wouldn't be able to give the financial prizes we give.
Could you put a number on the costs of staging a race like Cape and Ray?
I would say, including the putting on the prizes, we're looking at somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000, which might not sound a lot when you're talking about national A's, which are 10 times that much. But it's still a lot of money if, as a brand with no real income, that we're ending up paying costs, which we haven't so far.
That's a very good way of putting it, Deb. I mean, £5,000 sounds like a comparatively insignificant sum to stage a sporting event until you're the person who has to raise that sum. Have you ever found yourself in the unfortunate position of facing a loss?
We've done okay in that kind of thing. As a series, it costs between 10 and 12, a bit more as a series to put on. Because the prize money is just over 3,000 for the series. And then putting on the races, it's round about that kind of cost. So when you look at what it costs through the year, it's a significant cost.
Is it tougher to make the numbers add up for the other two rounds?
Yes. So even if there's ostensibly a profit after Cape and Ray, I really need to hold it until we do the final one in July. Because I don't really know how many people will be. I know that some teams will be away at the end of April doing races abroad, which is one of the things that has changed with teams coming in. Even if they're not pro teams, a lot more teams take their members abroad to do a few races. They're not always in this country to be able to do them.
Are you confident that Oakenclough and Ufton will grow too, perhaps by piggybacking on Cape and Race success?
Yes, I think so. I mean, last year, it wasn't necessarily the strongest team that won the overall team prize. It was the team that was at all three events. You have to be at the last event to be able to win it. If you just do the first two, regardless of how well you've done, you can't get it. We don't really want to give prizes out to somebody who isn't there. So you have to be there. So it was a fairly local team who won it. So in that way, you feel like you can reward people for doing the whole series. I think that works.
Well, this might be wildly ambitious, but can you foresee a time when overall victory in the proper Northern Road Race Series might almost rival the prestige of winning the National Road Series?
I kind of have a feeling like the margins is always the most interesting place to be in terms of witnessing change and where you stand. I think the margins is a great place to stand. And if that's where we are, then I'm kind of happy with that. And I'm not really interested in trying to compete with the National Road Series. but to be something that runs alongside it, because you always need to have more than one pathway, always. And the winners, in, for instance, Sami, who did win the National Road Series, I think she came second in our series, with Mary Wilkinson taking the overall title. So there seems to be a bit of synergy, and you can tell one from the other. It gives people more of a chance to win one thing. So you're just not looking at the people who win the National Road Series, but you're looking at people who win other series that are quite prestigious with difficult courses. I feel fine about that one.
The one thing that organisers cannot legislate for is character. Strada Bianchi, I guess, is the ultimate example, but, you know, Trobro Leon would be another, the Cycle Classic, even the Lincoln Grand Prix. Seems that Cape and Ray belongs in that category too.
Oh, to even be included in a list of those races is tremendously flattering, and both Toby and I would be immensely proud just to be in the same sentence as any of those races. Yeah, absolutely.
Tell us about your wider ambitions, Deb. You mentioned that it would be difficult to make Cape and Ray a National A race, even if you wanted to, given the geographical challenges, you know, getting a convoy of cars, neutral service, etc., along those very narrow roads. But do you have ambitions to expand? I mean, if BC came to you and said, look, we'd really like to use this course for a national championships, as they've done at Lincoln, as they're doing this year in Cleveland, would you put your hand up for that?
Definitely be interested in discussing it with them. There are the actual Cape and Ray course, the circuit that's risk assessed. There is a larger, longer course that has been risk assessed in the past. So if BC would decide to put the money into doing that, then that would be enormously helpful. So there would be things they could do to include that. We'd always be open to discussions. Absolutely.
Well, more power to you, Deb. I think many people would be delighted to see Cold Dark North organise the National Road Race Championships. I love your observation that, you know, the margins are always the most interesting place to stand. It's the characterful events that people cherish, and you certainly have at least one of those, so congratulations on that. Now, if people want to follow Cold Dark North on social media, how do they go about it?
Our website is just Cold Dark North. I think it probably comes up first on any search for it. It's a great site. Well done, Toby, for putting it together. So it's well worth looking at. And if you want to know about any of the riding around here, the hills, you can just look back at all the interviews with racers, non-racers, people who've done the Fred seven times and can really tell you about it, women who've done the Fred seven times, who can tell you about all the hills. So it's a great website to have a look at, and definitely the Insta account, the Instagram account, and the stories are really well done. So you can check that out about Cape and Ray.
Brilliant. And your social media address is at Cold Dark North, I think. Now, don't forget, everybody, this Sunday sees the second round of the Proper Northern Road Race Series at Oakham Club in Lancashire, close to the Forest of Bowland. The men will compete over 6 laps, and the women will race for 5 laps. Each lap is 17.5 kilometres and contains 270 metres of climbing, so far from flat. If you want live updates, race photography, video interviews, then follow Brother UK-sponsored Velo UK on Twitter, at Velo UK, and at Aussie Larry. Of course, you can follow Brother Cycling too. We're at Brother Cycling on all 3 channels. Deb, thank you very much indeed for joining me today. And thank you to everybody out there for listening.
If you've enjoyed today's episode, please hit subscribe.